The following program is produced and furnished by Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today we're going to be talking to Nick Sinai, Senior Advisor at Insight Venture Partners, and Matt Rose, Director of Application Security Strategy at Checkmarks. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be here.
Thank you very much.
So, gentlemen, application security. Layer 7, Gartner estimates 80% of all attacks hit at that layer.
Well, Matt's the real expert here from Checkmarks. But maybe I'll give just a little bit of framing here and how this fits into the administration's kind of plans. There's been this great effort and focus on cybersecurity and, you know, an IT modernization plan, part of the president's management agenda, which recently came out. So it's this great integration of cybersecurity with IT modernization. And so it's not this other thing. It's actually part of it. And I think that's really great. And there's an increasing focus on DevOps and how we build applications in a more user-centered focus. But we're still kind of mostly focused on the network side and on the tick, on consolidating data centers and all of those kinds of things. And so I think that's an opportunity that was a little bit missed, frankly, in the IT modernization plan was to talk more about application security. You know, there is a fair amount of conversation about data security and encrypting data at rest. And I think that's super important, too. But I think we could talk more about application security in the federal government and in kind of the plans that are being executed on.
Well, we still have billions and billions of dollars worth of legacy modernization that has to happen. Is there something we can do on the application security side while we're planning, budgeting, and doing all those things to bring new applications or modernize?
Yeah, and I think that's it's part of good security practices is we're talking about what are we going to do with these legacy applications, right? And so how are we going to bring them to the cloud? And so how are you going to put good application security, figure out those vulnerabilities and bring them to the cloud? So this isn't just about how you kind of build new stuff, which Matt will talk a lot about, but you know that's very much about how can we shift left and put security into the actual process and make it DevSecOps.
Yeah, Matt, you're Director of Application Security Strategy. So what's our strategy?
Well, I apologize for the title right up front, but from the standpoint of the application itself, doesn't matter if it's in the commercial space or the government space, no matter what realm you're talking, the applications, we're kind of in a transition phase of the way applications are being developed. Nick mentioned DevOps. DevOps is a true thing, and most organizations are in a transition phase from typical software development methodologies around waterfall and very structured, clearly defined blocks of code being delivered in clearly defined, scheduled environments. Everyone is moving to an environment that is responsive to change, and these applications are being built very, very quickly, and they're very complex. And they're pretty much running the day-to-day operations of every aspect of our lives. If we're not thinking proactively about remediating the issues that may exist in these applications, we're going to fall behind very quickly because these applications are going to be released a lot quicker, a lot more often, so there's going to be a lot more change, and the responsiveness to that change has to be in line with the new methodologies and processes of DevOps.
Well, I think you bring up a great point. Waterfall was predominantly the government's method, and I know, Nick, you were part of a huge transformation to bring agile methodology to the federal government. Is that still propagating at the same pace that it was in the past?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was just at a conference today where a number of federal executives, CIOs, folks from the White House were talking about agile and DevOps and really putting user needs as that core and how do you have more continuous delivery of an IT system. When government or government contractors are building a system. We're also, of course, pushing to more commercial off the shelf. But the fact of the matter is there's a lot of things in federal government where government is going to continue to build or build with contractors. And in those cases, we have to deliver more continuously in smaller sprints rather than this kind of, you know, quarterly or annual kind of delivery. And so there's some really good examples of this in some of the armed services, on some of the federal civilian side, USCIS is probably one of the better known federal civilian agencies. And I think having good application security practices is a good part of that. One of the ways that I would think about it is if we're thinking about how do we do things in more automated and continuous ways, and that, yes, is about building applications, but it's also in how we deal with data. So you can think about data ops, and it's also in how we do security, and you kind of think about more continuous security ops. And so part of that is moving from, you know, these scans once a quarter or once a week or once a year to a more continuous scanning process. You can think about it in terms of, you know, we used to have this big bang authorization for an ATO, but how can we really get to ongoing authorizations? So there's this theme of automation and doing things in a more continuous or automated fashion. And I think application security is absolutely part of that.
I agree. And the phrase I like to use is automation and integration. We no longer have clearly defined blocks of deliverables. Everything is, the lines are blurred. Things are in motion continuously. Nick mentioned sprints. Organizations, no matter what they're developing, are putting out applications very, very quickly. So thinking about the risk and the responsiveness to change is important. And the scanning, quote unquote, no matter what type of scanning you're talking about for security, needs to be transparent and not a roadblock to the process. Because anything that's a roadblock to the process, doesn't matter if it's functional testing or security testing, it's going to be a problem with the way software is being developed. And thinking about as you're developing, you mentioned third-party consultants developing applications. One thing that organizations really need to think about too is the open source packages you're using in part of your application, because you don't want to reinvent the wheel every time you write an application. You want to leverage existing components that do core functionality that's very consistent. But what is the risk in that open source? Are you verifying that using the right version? Are there actually vulnerabilities in those open source packages? So thinking about it holistically from the homegrown code or the code developed by third party or the open source packages or anything else you're adding to the application and putting in a streamlined process to account for all those while that DevOps program or Agile-based program is actually being initiated.
So we got about a minute and a half before we go to break. Why is there resistance to that? Why are you, and I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. Why is there resistance? That makes perfect sense.
The resistance is really about adding additional process. So applications are supposed to be released on a set date. We have a project is supposed to be out the first of the month, the 30th of the month, whatever that is. Anything that derails that process is detrimental. So automation integration really helps if it's behind the scenes and it's not actually derailing the process and it's actually providing the artifacts of security scans to the people responsible to fix them. That's important. So people just are either, I don't know, what's the best way to put it, are afraid of the vulnerabilities and they're afraid of how to actually fix them correctly, or they're just actually using the security products for identification and not remediation. And that's the key process, is remediation of the risk, not just identification.
My guests today are Nick Sinai, Senior Advisor at Insight Venture Partners, and Matt Rose, Director of Application Security Strategy at Checkmarks. Let's pull on that thread when we come back. Okay. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
They have to see it. We have to stream this live now.
From the producers of Federal Agency Lifeline and IT, the New Frontier.
We're streaming live in 3,
now
2,
comes another winter blockbuster.
1.
Starring a 40-year veteran journalist and the host of The Federal Drive.
Daddy, are you a spy?
Tom Temin.
Son, we don't talk about that stuff.
And a 20-year veteran of executive branch coverage and executive editor of Federal News Radio.
Hey, we're dealing with a couple of really smart guys here.
The award-winning journalist, Jason Miller.
We gotta disconnect the servers. No, we gotta disconnect the servers.
They will never look at cybersecurity the same way again. Cybersecurity the same way again.
FederalNewsRadio.com. Experience the difference.
Rated GS 11 and above. Showing now at FederalNewsRadio.com.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guests today are Nick Sinai, Senior Advisor at Insight Venture Partners, and Matt Rose, Director of Application Security Strategy at Checkmarks. Matt, before the break, you mentioned people being afraid of the vulnerability. But the vulnerability is going to get you, right? I mean, it's a payday that's going to come at some point, right? You're either dealing with it while you're still in the testing and development environment, or you're trying to get an ATO and trying to get this thing in the production environment.
Well, there's really two ways to look at this. Based on the way you develop software, there are vulnerabilities that you can find very early, and the desire is to find them very early in the SDLC process or in the Agile-based process to fix them at the early stages because you're writing the code, you're fixing them right now. But a lot of times you have to be diligent at every stage of the process because a lot of times the vulnerabilities themselves don't actually propagate themselves until the application is completely put together. So you can't just say, I'm going to be scanning and looking for security vulnerabilities right before release. You can't say, I'm going to look for vulnerabilities only at the beginning when I'm designing or writing the initial lines of code. You actually have to have testing as far left in the SDLC process while you're writing the code, while you check in and do your initial testing, and while you do your build environment. Because the complexity of the applications that we're providing to the end users these days are really the biggest problem. They're super complex. There's millions upon millions of lines of code in some of these applications, and it's impossible for one individual to know every permutation of risk in that application. So the developer proactively programming on his desktop all the way through the build, the CI process, the continuous integration process, is very important. And the fact that they're scared is they don't know what their colleagues in the other group are developing. They don't know if their code's going to affect the other person's code or vice versa. So they are basically looking at it like, I think my code is good, but when it's all brought together, it may have specific vulnerabilities.
Yeah, my sense is, and I'd be interested in your opinion, Sean, but my sense is that application security in the federal government has tended to be more of a security gate after the application mm-hmm. is built.
It is. I would agree.
And so then it ends up in one of these conversations of what are we going to do with all of these vulnerabilities? How many of them are false positives? For the ones that are real vulnerabilities, how are we going to go back and remediate? And turns into a big process and just delays the system going live, which creates a whole bunch of downstream effects. The big one is, you know, one, technology changes, and are you getting stale in your stack? But two, are you actually meeting user need, right? And so the sooner that we can get working software into the hands of users and deliver real value securely, the better we're going to be and continue to move away from waterfall.
You and I have had this conversation in the sense that it becomes a security problem when it's not a security problem. It was a development problem, right? Yeah. And it was done in a way that security wasn't brought in until the gate. I need an ATO. I need to put this on the network. And now I want you to bless it. Well, the risks are too high now that I feel comfortable blessing this program. And so now I'm putting you through POEMs and, you know, trying to get through this process, rescanning, and you're fixing one thing and it's changing something else and opening up new vulnerabilities. And it is a process that puts a black eye on the security folks, right? And we feel like, look, if you just brought us back here, you know, at the beginning of the program, we could have helped you. We could have got some scanning in place. We could have looked at how we could have looked at this so that really the problems were only existing is when we do bring them all together, as Matt talked about. Then, okay, there was no way to really get ahead of that, right? I mean, now you're bringing these together and you might not have been sure of how they would have reacted together once they're brought together and there's some more vulnerabilities are broken that have been brought forward so we can fix those. So I agree. I'm, as you know, a big proponent of doing this scanning as early as possible in the development cycle so that we can get ahead of it. And when you're just about ready to start the security gate, I'm hoping to be able to sign off within a week. Mm-hmm. That was always my goal.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great goal. Just food for thought on best practices associated with. Nick mentioned false positives and, you know, pushing left. That one of the first things that people miss when they initiate an application security program, specifically around the code of the applications, is they look for too many things. If you're looking across the board, everything has risk. It's a kind of, are you willing to accept some risk? Some things are a lot more important in terms of the risk in the application. It's all about likelihood and impact of the vulnerability. I suggest, and I think it's best, that when you start a program, you start with 5 to 10 real key vulnerabilities, the high-risk vulnerabilities. Maybe it maps to, if it's a web application, OWASP or SANS or CWE or something like that, that you're basically using to create a very small subset of real issues that you can address so you're not overwhelming the development staff early on. When I talk to individuals that write code, I say, you know, you have that ability to fix the vulnerabilities early with a take-home test. So the security professionals creates a very short list of things that must be fixed. It gives them to the development staff and says, we're not going to overwhelm you. We're going to give you these set of things. It's the take-home test. They get to study, do the take-home test. And when the CI process actually starts, that's the final exam.
But let's go down that, because I don't know if I agree with you. All right. So, and let me tell you why. Technology moves at such a rapid pace, right?
Agreed.
So, you know, in the environments, and I'm not going to even say government, I think security as a whole, we're all trying to catch ourselves. We're all trying to catch up. I mean, we're just behind. The technology is advancing so quickly, and the threat vectors are increasing at such a pace. I mean, to the point, to launch an attack nowadays takes very little skill set, whereas 10 years ago, it took a great deal of skill set.
Agreed.
Right? Now, it's a video, a toolkit, read the instructions, launch. Right? And so it's hard for security professionals to put that list. Here's what I'll give back to you and what I would say to you on that is let's get the scan and then let's have a real conversation about what the highs, the mediums, and lows are, right? And let's focus on the highs. I think that we're saying the same thing in that. But let's also discuss what I've experienced in the conversation is, look, you're just being ridiculous. This is going to take us forever. There's just too many. I get it. But we've got to sit up there. And usually the CIO signs off, and we've got to say, look, this is an acceptable risk, and this is why, right? Mm-hmm. In the end, we become your public defender, right? and say, this is an acceptable risk, and this is why, right? But here's the piece. If an attack is successful and comes down, and it's on that application that I said, this is an acceptable risk, I'm the one sitting in the seat,
yeah, you're
right?
Taking the risk.
And then you have a culture within the government, which is not risk averse, but it's got a really low risk tolerance, right? And so what I would suggest is not so much get the take-home test, but let's get a scan going so that we can have an articulate conversation together and figure out how do we get this down to a level that I'm comfortable, right? And because I think most security professionals, not all, I mean, there's some that are down to the letter of law, this is what the policy says, et cetera, want to enable business and want to get you on the network as soon as possible, right? Because we're getting beat up all the time. Nick, I could tell you had something to say on that.
Yeah, and so I think there's two pieces to this. There's the security as the check, right? The kind of auditing function of, but then there's also the. So I used to have a general counsel when I was in government that was a keep me out of jail, get to yes kind of lawyer. Who said let's look at the law and then let's have this conversation about how I can be helpful in your objectives. And I think. And I'm sure you did this, Sean, which is, yes, part of my office will have to be the security check and kind of be the people who say no if the risk isn't acceptable.
Okay.
But let's actually go upstream and work with you. And so part of that is tools that help you shift left and do those kinds of scanning. Other pieces of it, I think, are around training. And that's why every CIO and CISO seems to talk about workforce, because it's getting developers to be thinking about securing coding securely, rather than it being an afterthought. Everyone wants to write, code fast and ship fast. But the more that we can train developers and even embed some of your staff when you were a CISO, embed some of your staff into those development teams as much as possible.
Yeah.
I think that's a way forward.
Yeah, no, and I think the VBA had a really good process with their Scrum sessions. I think they brought those stakeholders in play so that it could come out to where we wanted to come out at the end. My guests today are Nick Sinai, Senior Advisor at Insight Venture Partners, and Matt Rose, Director of Application Security Strategy at Checkmarks. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Vivian Williams. Chronic pain. Chances are you either have it or you know someone who does. So how is chronic pain defined?
The most common milestones, if you will, would be 3 or 6 months of chronic unrelenting pain for the majority of that time span.
Pain specialist Dr. Jason Eldridge says most people are referred from their primary care physician, and it's often the same complaint.
I think back pain by far is the single most common entity for the chronic pain patients we see.
Treatment options are wide-ranging, and while surgery may be an effective option for some,
we try to proceed with the less aggressive options first, because the reality is most people with pain, especially acute or subacute pain, will do better on their own with conservative therapy for about 3 months.
Dr. Eldridge also recommends a multidisciplinary team approach, including psychological tools to help patients during difficult days of chronic pain. For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Vivian Williams.
News happens while you're engaged in your mission. Sign up for our In Case You Missed It newsletter. FederalNewsRadio.com. Search alerts.
Welcome back to Cyber Chat on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guests today are Nick Sinai, Senior Advisor at Inside Venture Partners, and Matt Rose, Director of Applications Security Strategy at Checkmarks. Before, we were having a lively discussion before about the security folks, the application folks working together. But what are some best practices? What can people start to enter into conversations to accelerate their programs through the process to get on the network?
So in my opinion, starting a program with security as part of the conversation is vitally important. We talked about DevOps previously in one of the segments, where there's a lot of transition into DevOps, into, you know, agile-based methodology with continuous integration and continuous deployment within the applications. These programs are being designed without security being part of the conversation. So having security as part of that conversation is paramount for a successful program, because you're going to have that pushback, that all of a sudden that gate where you do not get approval to move into production because there's security vulnerabilities being defined. If you automate your process, but you don't automate security, you're going to have pushback. And that's where it's going to be problematic for the development teams to understand and really grasp the vulnerabilities and why I'm spending more time in fixing these.
But I have a question on that. And Nick, you can jump in on this as well. They're not inviting security because they look at them as the chief of no, okay? They're just going to give me a whole bunch more to do. They're not adding any value. So I think we have to go back. Like a lot of CISOs, I'm a network guy, okay? So Application's not my forte, right? I've taken time to learn it and learn how to communicate with my application cohorts. But so what do we also have to do to help the CISOs understand the application process without making them think we're teaching them to understand the application process? I think that has to be part of the solution.
No, I agree. And I think the conversation has to be around trust, because you don't want to be considered the police or the narc in the conversation, where they basically, we can't let them into the conversation because they're going to delay our process. Where I always like to extend the olive branch of peace to the development staff from the security staff to say, we want you to understand why we're going through this. And I suggest any organization has that open relationship with brown bag lunches, with lunch and learns, with seminars about here's the risk and here's why we're being a pain in the butt about this, for lack of a better explanation, because this risk is real and it's not going away. The next time you put a new application on the web or an internal system that's processing PII data or trade secrets or government secrets or something like that, and you give an open kind of forum for people to access it, you're opening the risk. And if you're not thinking about that security, that risk is going to be, may propagate itself very, very quickly. Because there's unlimited time and resources for somebody to hack an application.
Nick, so you kind of live this, right? I mean, U.S. Digital Services had to come in and they were, you know, wanting to move fast, wanted to get things in place, and had to deal with government bureaucracy as they were trying to transform, right? What did you learn in the process?
Yeah, and so I was there when USDS was created, and a lot of my friends have been a part of it. But I just to be clear, I wasn't part of the U.S. Digital Service. I was a senior exec in the White House at the time. It really was a learning lesson for a number of the teams there. And so I think part of it was there was a lot of smoke jumping or firefighting at the beginning, and so that it was kind of jumping in and trying to do just basic site reliability engineering and get something back up. And so there was less of the focus on, you know, the back to basics and kind of thing that we're talking about here, which I do have a thought here, Sean, which is CISOs really have to say, who's their AppSec person on their team? Who's the person who's responsible, or a whole team that is responsible for AppSec? Even if you came up on the network security side, you have to have that core competency as a CISO. And for development teams, they need to have the security people, right? And I get it that there's different different levels. And so that those, because you're fundamentally still going to have developers and you're still going to have security teams, but both of them have got to have kind of core AppSec capabilities, and then hopefully, to Matt's point, we can kind of build that trust.
So is that the bridge that Matt and I were talking about, the AppSec person on the Scrum teams?
There's certain terms that people use. The common is like security maven or security evangelist within the development teams. And a lot of times those people want to understand the vulnerabilities themselves, and those are the key people to act as the bridge. Because a lot of times, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong in your experiences, the security team doesn't understand code, the development team doesn't understand security. So we need somebody that can actually be that bridge. Maybe an individual that's on the development side of the house has the ability or the training around the security vulnerabilities from a code standpoint that really help find those vulnerabilities and fix them early.
No, I agree. And I think those are good. What other best practices?
Best practices, one of the things that people miss a lot is, I like to call it an application threat inventory. So you have maybe, you know, tens, hundreds of applications in your organization. You say, what's my riskiest application? Sometimes people can't answer that question.
Agree.
So I like to say, don't have a big, long, complicated process to do the threat inventory. Answer three to five questions about the application. Does it process PII data? Does it process any type of secret data? Is it on a web-based application? And give them a 1 to 3 ranking, and then that allows you to say, okay, these are my most riskiest applications. They're processing critical information from a PII standpoint or from a government secret standpoint. Those are the ones we need to focus on first, and then you have a tier 2, tier 3. Because, again, there's so many applications and more are coming down the pipe every day, especially with the advent of DevOps. You need to basically know where to spend most of your time based on the risk those applications present to you.
Final thoughts, Matt. Application security, how are we going to move this needle forward in the during this administration, next 3 years?
I think the biggest thing is training and staying the training. The day that you feel like you've been trained and you're sufficient in your training is the day you fall behind the curve. The training has to keep up with the new languages that are being developed, the mobile languages, the more modern web development languages. The training has to be continuous as long with the process. If you basically decide on January 1 that you do training and you don't do training for another 12, 18 months, you don't understand the security risks in those applications. So the training has to be hand in hand with the modern development languages and processes, especially with DevOps, because it's constantly moving. It's responsive to change. It's responsive to need. You need to basically map that training exactly as the process that's developing the applications.
I agree.
Yeah, and just building on that, making sure that we're keeping our hiring pipelines up, right? So we got to continue to upskill the great federal workforce that we've got, but we also got to make sure that we continue to recruit great talent, both on the security and the development side. And I'm a big fan of small interdisciplinary. Sorry, this is radio. I should be able to get this. I'm a fan of small teams with different skill sets, and I think application security has got to be one of those skill sets that is brought to bear.
My guests today have been Nick Sinai, Senior Advisor at Inside Venture Partners, and Matt Rose, Director of Application Security Strategy at Checkmarks. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. We will see you next month.
You've been listening to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show at federalnewsradio.com. Search Cyber Chat.
Hi, I'm Jared Serbu, the host of Federal News Radio's On DoD. Join me each week for a close-up view of the Defense Department from the management perspective. We examine the department from every angle with interviews with top brass and industry experts. It's reliable information from the people in the know. That's On DoD, every Wednesday at 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock Eastern on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, or download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search On DoD.